You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Tyrol Hassel-Knippe. Tyrol, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Tyrol, we're going to talk about your show that's running through February 24th of this year, 2024, at Magenta. The title of the show, the title of the installation is Hyperstate, and I want to talk to you about a number of things here, but let's just talk about that title, Hyperstate. Can you tell me a little bit about that, what Hyperstate means in this context?
Well, actually, it has a bit of two entries for myself into it. Hyperstate for this show really kind of described my entry into art at this moment, but also, I guess, the world at this moment in time. It feels like it's like almost like a take on being hypervigilant or being hyperaware or being very connected to an emotional response. And so I thought that was a bit fitting to this exhibition. And the other sort of entry is it almost a little bit more silly in the context of the show, but when I was a teenager, I was going to a lot of raves, and I kind of caught the latter part of the sort of rave culture, which is, I think, the only proper subculture I ever really was a part of. But yeah, there was a huge national rave in Norway called Hyperstate, which I was able to sneak into underage for a couple of years there. And so I was trying to find a title for the show, and sort of Hyperstate was kind of came to me.
Mm. Well, I like that. I'd like to talk about both those experiences or definitions or associations. The rave you said you went to as underage kid, What was that like? I mean, that Hyperstate reference, of course, means something else in that context, right? I mean, I want to also talk about the political, social, and everything else you said before that. But to talk about that stage, because that's a very kind of innocent stage. You know, you're there underage. You shouldn't be there, but you want to be there. You came back there. What do you associate with the term Hyperstate in that? In that scenario, because you're talking about like dancing for hours, right?
I think at the time we felt a bit of misunderstood by sort of mainstream culture, which is, I guess, the signifier of being a subculture. But we took like the music and the dancing quite seriously. It was like I guess where you would nowadays, like if you go to like ayahuasca, like mushroom psychedelic experience. It was very much like trying to like go like deep into your own body. And it was like a collective, a collective of a mass of bodies all trying to sort of reach this state of ecstasy in a sense. But it was, so it was like both very social in format, but then also very introverted in experience was how I felt about it. And so, yeah, we were very serious about this trance music and techno music.
serious about it in a way of like changing your consciousness, changing your physical being. What do you mean by serious?
We thought it was really important. Yeah, we thought it was really important music. We thought it was really important and high quality music that was sort of the conductor to getting you closer to yourself. And I'm speaking kind of like my take of it. And I'm saying we, but so anyone take it with a grain of salt. But at the time it was quite malign music and ridiculed, and people thought it was silly and without substance. And I guess we thought the opposite of that in a way. And so I think we went into it almost like how you go into a classical concert or opera or something in a way. And of course, like, we're not going to, you know, brush away the fact that drugs were part of that, which, you know, as I said, like, now you see that also the resurgence of people, you know, using psychedelics and mushrooms and these types of things to do the same that we were trying to do with our crazy raves. But, yeah, that's kind of my teenage experience of that culture.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you know, and the term hyperstate makes sense there too, you know, even as associated with other psychedelic experiences now, from ayahuasca to peyote, mushrooms, and LSD, everything. So then there's the other kind of statement of or definition of hyperstate, which is completely external, right? If I understood you correctly, the state that the world is in?
I guess it's the state that I am in also. I guess it's a bit of a, maybe my judgment or my impression of where we're at this moment. It's a very heightened time, heightened politically, heightened emotions around what's happening. And it feels like there's a lot of change in perception of what is happening, changes in general. But truly, I also wanted to encapsulate in the title, or at least not move away from the fact that the project itself was based on quite a personal story or personal path with having chronic illnesses. And in those illnesses, and of late, I've been dealing with really, really severe brain fog. And in the last years dealing with this, I had quite of a identity crisis as an artist, as a person, as a human, feeling like my cognitive abilities were very lessened, and sort of the mind that I was used to having was not there. And so I found through this project of kind of instead of looking at that the brain fog, how I experience it, instead of looking through the lens of intense self-judgment and shame, to be honest, I was trying to look at it through the eyes of an artist and through the eyes of imagery, and try to explain the very eternal internal experience of brain fog to an audience, to make sort of a space where you could walk in. And what I found in this project, so this is sort of a second iteration of that project, was that I could reach art again. It was always probably there, regardless of my shame, regardless of my panic about not being able to do art anymore. It was just that the connection was emotional first, and maybe not intellectual first, or conceptual first, maybe, or however you want to sort of scaffold that. And so I thought the hyperstate was kind of a little bit of descriptive of how I then was able to attach to ideas in this new format of myself, which maybe was just not so far away from my old self, but it was a bit of a revelation to see that emotions worked just like before, even if sort of the work around how to speak about things to myself and to others kind of looked a little different. So hyperstate. So yeah, not to like go off on like get lost in my own tangents here, but I think that was also like I wanted to include that into the title without being too on the nose with the use of words. So the hyperstate is both sort of this like hypervigilance, this heightened emotionality that we have around maybe sort of the society, about our collective, about other humans, about how we can handle world events, and also about the personal sort of element of me finding like a new highway to art, and then this sort of more anecdotal trance music, rave party, and yeah, story.
So no, I'm glad you shared that. That wasn't anecdotal or far afield. It's really interesting to hear that approach. And so the show itself, of course, is an installation. It's immersive. When you talk about it like that, it makes me think of how being in the show also was, I wouldn't say a kind of brain fog, but something's happening optically, right? Something's happening perceptually, which taps into a little bit of rave psychedelic culture, maybe, as you're saying, but also it's real, right? Whether you're, all the experiences are real, but being sober, walking into that space, not being in an altered state, the installation seems to almost put you into one, right? There is visual things happening there that with luminosity that seem to kind of question what it is we're looking at. Was that part of the idea? I mean, that was my feeling.
So the whole thought of making a room, a space, comparable to my brain fog. It's actually quite funny. I mean, I think part of why I became an artist is I think so much in imagery, and so everything is an allegory, which can be annoying to other people, but everything, it's like an. So I guess that's a bit of a beauty in it, is that the brain fog hasn't really affected the ability to conjure images out of experiences. And so I thought that if I was to use one example of brain fog, of my experience with the change of my old self and my current self, would be that before my brain, my brain activity, my thoughts, my ideas, how I thought, it just didn't have any specific boundaries. It felt like how we view the universe, how we view the space, outer space. So that was just not a thought of how that felt. It didn't feel like anything. It felt like you could reach any place at any time. There was no issue. And when I started dealing with brain fog, the space started enclosing, and instead of me being able to reach whatever spaces I wanted, I was forced into whatever space I was in. And it almost felt like I was going from outer space into like living in a hallway. You had a chest of drawers, and suddenly there was nothing in the drawer that you were trying to find, or the drawer was missing. It just felt very like suddenly physical in nature, this thing that had never felt like anything, really. So I wanted to kind of make a room where you entered and certain things started and ended, and you couldn't quite make sense of it, and you couldn't quite make sense of the distances. And so you would get a bit disoriented, but there would definitely be pathways, but then it wouldn't make sense. Like, it started and stopped making sense as you were sort of participating in sort of walking around. And there's a sort of darkness and light, and so originally I thought that the portals, which the space is filled with 22 light portals, I would try to describe it as, which are light sculptures that you can walk through. So they're fairly large. And I wanted sort of the the portals to make up almost like words or sentences, but again, like this abruption of the logic would keep happening. And the portals themselves started to take quite a human form, in my eyes anyway. So as in the beginning, they were very much supposed to be like just ideas, an allegory of an idea or the imagery of an idea. How do you make it an abstract image of an idea? But then now how they turned out, I feel like they do also have some similarities to like an outline of a body or something like that.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I had an association like that to the outline of a body. And the press release I wanted to talk about that you wrote in four sections, Corridor, Reentering the Metropolis, Science Fiction Kept Me Ready, and Erroring. This reads like a poem or like a prose poem, not at all like a press release, right? That says,
yeah,
you know, what the artist intends or what's happening in this show. I'd love to hear more about this, because it seems that it's about a number of things that we're talking about, but also about like the sense of what's real, what's not, what we're touching, what we're not touching, what's reality and what's not reality. I don't know if, I mean, those were some of my associations with it. But for you, this was kind of a bold piece of writing, right? This is something that also put you out there in a different way. And that was, that's not easy to decipher in a narrative way.
I actually used to write quite a bit for my shows in similar manner, but you know, this was a long time ago, so a bit of a different stage of my career, different type of reader, maybe an audience. But I used to write quite a lot, and how I viewed it was sort of poetry, but science fiction, or some kind of in-between genre of something that I didn't really have a format that I was copying, but I found it quite beautiful as an experience to be able to express something visually and then also express around that in text form. But then, as I've already now mentioned, the brain fog started really kicking in around 2016 and such, and around then it just felt like I couldn't reach that writing place anymore, and that was a bit of a heartache for me, and so I continued doing visual art, and then I left writing behind, and I didn't even like sort of talk to anyone. You know, people would be like, why aren't you writing? Or you know, we were supposed to do a book, and it was like all these things. But I just like shut down that part of me, and I even couldn't really talk about the reasons why or what happened. But then with doing this show about the portals, I felt like I had almost just bared myself so much in sort of exposing sort of the most ashamed version of myself, and then feeling like that the shame sort of evaporated and didn't of course change any of the brain fog, or didn't change me or anything like that, but it did change how I viewed myself. And so I think it made me think that if I could emotionally reach a place of making art, then I could emotionally reach a place of writing. And so, so I did the writing. Originally, I was going to get somebody, as you do as an artist, you get somebody very smart and hope, you know, maybe distinguished in some kind of capacity to write something really great about your work and make it sound really good. And this, I don't know, like the state of the world, the sort of bearing of myself in the process of making the work and talking about the work. It just felt the most organic to include this text. And, you know, the gallery was very supportive. And so we just did that. And I don't know if it's the, you know, you never know. Is that the right decision? I haven't heard anything very negative about it, about that decision, but you never know. But I find that, like, press releases are crunchy, tricky things regardless. So
they are, they are. For me, it brought me right in. I love the press release. It I knew it was your voice, and so that kind of brought me into it. And because it wasn't literal and specific, it you know, allowed me to enter into, you know, what I thought was your world or what the hyperstate is. So yeah, in my view, it was very successful. Cheryl, it's great talking to you about this. I want to thank you for talking to me. There's for those of you who aren't who are listening, this show runs to the 24th of February. I'll also link to the text we're talking about, the press release. And I want to ask you one more question, Cheryl, before we go, which is off topic, but I'm curious, what are you reading at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm actually reading The Hundred Years' War on Palestine by Rashid Khalidi, which I found to be quite like a necessary read for this moment in time. I'm finding it enlightening.
Cheryl, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate this beautiful show you put together and hope the listeners get to see it. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.